Welcome back. I told you it was going to be a really good show. I told you it was going to be two really good hours. Father Tad Bolshick knocks it out of the park, as usual. And now, into the studio walks Carlo Broussard. Carlo, a renowned speaker and author. His latest book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Hello, Carlo.
Hey, Si.
Very nice to see you.
Good to see you. I guess now I got to get a grand slam since Father Tad had a home run.
I said home run? Okay, so yeah, you do need to get a grand slam. Yes, you...
Hopefully I don't strike out, man.
Thank you for continuing the metaphor. I appreciate that. Sometimes I use them and I don't even realize that I did. So you're pretty much a guaranteed grand slam. This hour, however, a little bit of a tough topic because you're such an intolerant person, and the topic is tolerance.
What do you mean by that?
And you're supposed to be tolerant. You're being intolerant. This is all stuff that we hear pretty much on a daily basis in our society now. A lot and often in very acute. Accusatory ways, but you come and you have a certain moral clarity, which I'm sure that's something that most people crave, but it's also something that many people find very frustrating.
Sure.
So the topic then is truth or tolerance. This hour, 888-318-7884 is the number if you'd like to talk about that. If you have questions for Carlo, lots of people think Christians are intolerant. Recently saw a story. I mean, you recently saw this story. You pointed it out to me about, you tell it.
A few days ago, Ashlyn Harris, a backup goaltender for the U.S. Women's Soccer World Cup champions, came out with a tweet slamming star soccer player. I'm not sure how to pronounce her first name here, Jaylene, I would assume, Hinkle.
Hinkle. I'm just kidding.
Sorry. I don't know. I'm going to go with Hinkle. I apologize to her if I'm mispronouncing her name.
But
she's actually a devout Christian. And so Ashlyn Harris came out with a tweet calling her intolerant and homophobic. And the controversy arose because some reports had surfaced that noted that Jaylene Hinkle, considered one of the best players at her position, was left off of the national squad in 2017. And so the head coach came out and said, well, it was only based upon for soccer reasons, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Then some speculated, well, maybe it was because of her positions on so-called same-sex marriage. Because in 2017, and the whole, you know, LGBTQ movement, in 2017, she declined a national team call-up because she was going to be required to wear LGBTQ jerseys.
Okay.
And she was actually interviewed in 2018, last year, about her decision on a Christian television network, in which she said she felt convicted in her spirit that it wasn't her job to wear the jersey. And so she declined that invitation. And the founder of Culture Life of Africa, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce her name. You might be able to, because I assume
you know. I'm very good with names from Darren countries.
Darren nailed her name, but I'm not even going to try. But the founder of Culture Life Africa actually shared the interview Sunday on Twitter, to which Ashlyn Harris responded with her tweet on Monday, July 15th, which reads, our team is about inclusion. And she says, you know, saying to Hinkle, your religion was never the problem. The problem is your intolerance and you are homophobic, she says. You don't belong in a sport that aims to unite and bring people together. You would never fit into our pack or what this team stands for.
Wow,
so notice,
that's very clear.
So notice Ashlyn Harris is labeling Jaylene Hinkle with the intolerant label. You're homophobic, you're intolerant. For what reason? Because Jaylene has calmly and lovingly expressed her disapproval of so-called same-sex marriage and same-sex sexual activity, appealing to her Christian beliefs and what the Bible has to say about the immorality of those activities. And she did it in a loving way. When you look at the interview, she wasn't being, hateful about it. She wasn't being vindictive. She was just expressing her belief. And so that merited the response from Harris calling her intolerant. Hence, the topic of our show today, truth and tolerance. We hear this over and over and over again in the culture that any expressed opposition to what the culture perceives to be morally okay,
right,
such as same-sex sexual activity, right? Yeah. We're immediate, or if we oppose transgenderism,
yes,
we're immediately labeled as being intolerant, the assumption being we're being mean-spirited,
yeah,
in expressing our opposition, or you might say our negative moral evaluation of these particular behaviors. And so it's very important that we think about how we might respond to these claims or these charges that are made against Christians in general, but it could be a non-Christian who happens to oppose those behaviors as well. And it's important that we articulate ways in which we could respond, which hopefully we'll be able to do here in our broadcast.
I just realized it's Obi Anuju Ekeocha. That's the
there you
founder
go.
Of,
thank you very much.
No, but the reason we can pronounce her name, well, she actually helped us. She's been a guest on the show several
awesome.
Times, and we
that's
oh,
what Darren was saying.
Wonderful.
Yes.
But yeah, you think I just wake up in the morning able to pronounce Obi Anuju Ekeocha? No, she had to help us. Okay, so if you have questions about tolerance, if you maybe have faced this problem of being accused of intolerance because you hold this or that. That particular moral view, 888-318-7884 is the number. If it's the kids that are doing it, maybe the kids say, you're just not with the times, Mom and Dad. You're this is an old kind of intolerance, and you need to get with it. Well, I guess kids don't say get with it. Like that, okay, that just shows how old I am, but you know what I'm saying. You get it. 888-318-7884 is the number. You would also accept challenging questions, like maybe for
sure.
Someone who wants to say, hey, this lady was homophobic, and you shouldn't be defending.
Sure.
888-318-7884. It strikes me when I hear the story, though, that the woman didn't say, I'm not playing on a soccer team with people who are, for example, into the pride stuff or living a homosexual life or whatever. She didn't say, I'm not going to play with you.
Right.
She said, I'm not going to wear the jersey because
right.
That's not me.
She didn't want to have to celebrate
yeah.
a particular lifestyle and a movement
right.
that she thinks is immoral and doesn't approve of. And this gets to the essence of what people in the culture, and in particular Harris here, yeah. thinks tolerance to be. Because in as much as she makes the charge, you're being intolerant. Well, she's saying you ought to be tolerant. So that brings up the question, well, what do you mean by tolerance? What is your definition of tolerance? Well, when push comes to shove, in essence, what Harris is getting at is that we ought to celebrate and approve all life choices and lifestyles, that all life choices and lifestyles are equal and valid, right? That we ought not to be opposing
yeah.
any sort of behavior and saying, well, that's morally wrong, that's immoral, right? So that's basically what she's getting at with this label
yeah.
of tolerance, right? So
right.
now that we know, well, the essence and what she's getting at, that now we have a target, at which we can direct some responses. Number one, I would say, well, okay, if we need to be celebrating all life choices and lifestyles,
right?
Well, what about my life choice to not celebrate other people's life choices, right?
Yeah.
It's a part of my lifestyle.
Right.
It's a life choice that I'm going to live my life in a way that doesn't celebrate that particular behavior or that particular movement.
Yeah.
So if we need to be celebrating all lifestyles, tolerant, well, why not celebrate my life's choice
yeah.
and my lifestyle? So you see how it's sort of self-refuting or at least a double standard, right? And saying
right.
that, well, Carlo, you need to be celebrating that lifestyle, but yet they're not celebrating my lifestyle or my
yeah.
life choice in
yeah.
this case. And so notice how this position only tolerates itself.
Yes.
It only tolerates the view that it's only going to accept the view that we shouldn't be making judgments about people's lifestyles. And any opposition to that belief, it's not tolerated, right?
Right.
They're being intolerant of my life's choice, right? Secondly, I think we can respond and say, well, wait a minute. We can't celebrate all life choices. I mean, there are some life choices, right, that we can't celebrate and approve of. So, for example, if somebody chooses they want to be a serial killer and go around and killing people or go around and shooting people in theaters and in schools, we can't celebrate that life choice, obviously, right? No. We can't celebrate a person's life choice to be a thief and go around stealing things. We can't celebrate a person's life choice to be a rapist and go around sexually coercing women.
Yeah.
So there are some life choices that we can't celebrate. And that's important to point out. So we have to be able to distinguish between just forms of tolerance and or just forms of intolerance. Like we can't tolerate certain life choices that undermine the common good and harm people in those ways, right? So that's a just form of intolerance.
Yeah.
You see? But we have to distinguish that between
unjust
forms of intolerance, right? And so the question is, my evaluation that your behavior and the behavior that you engage in your lifestyle, if I think that's immoral, is that unjust? I'm not tolerating that in my belief system, right?
Yeah.
Is that somehow unjust? No, because if that's the case, well, then we could make no moral evaluation whatsoever, including our evaluation of those life choices that we said we can't tolerate for the common good.
Yeah, in the sexual realm, it seems to me that there was a time when we were intolerant of people just moving in together without being married, and that has subsided so much that I think people don't even know you're supposed to get married.
Right.
You know, if you become so tolerant that whatever, I don't care.
Right.
There's a certain point at which, okay, now, are you making clear to people that there is actually a right way and a wrong way to, and a good way and a not good way to form a family and to do all that? Or are you just going, it's tolerance, which really what it is you're not concerned for other people.
Right.
You're not concerned to tell them, hey, there's a better way to do this.
Well, if you acknowledge that, if you believe that all life choices and all lifestyles are the same and equal in value, right?
Right.
Or equally valid, well, in essence, what you're doing is denying an objective moral truth.
Yeah.
Or you're denying objective good. Like there is a good way of being a human being, right? Independent of what you or I happen to think. That's ultimately what you're denying in making this assertion that we need to be celebrating all life's choices, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the essence of what we call moral relativism.
Yeah.
But then we're right back in critiquing moral relativism, right? Because I could ask you, well, wait a minute, Cy, should I live in accord, or should I live my life as if moral relativism were true? Like, if that's the way the world really is, and there's no objective good moral life, independent of what you or I happen to think,
yeah,
well, then ought I to live my life in accord with that truth, that there is no objective good? If you say yes, that I should.
I'm going to get hurt, aren't I?
Well, then there's at least one moral truth.
Oh, yes. I forgot
that one. Namely,
that
I ought to live in accord with the truth of moral relativism.
So then it's not all relative.
That's right.
All right.
At least morally speaking. So that's one way in which we could critique moral relativism, even the belief in moral relativism. If moral relativism adequately describes reality and the way the world really is, well, then we have to ask the question, should I believe it? If I don't have to believe it, well, then why did you put it forward in the first place?
Yeah.
And secondly, if I don't have to believe it, so you're telling me I don't have to believe what's true? Well, isn't that what we're seeking here? Truth, right? At least in the realm of morality.
Yeah.
So these are ways in which we could respond to moral relativism, which I think is sort of the ground, the foundation or the assumption that's driving these claims. We need to celebrate all life's choices as equal and valid and have an equal value.
All right. There's lots of calls for you, Carla, but we got to take a break. We'll get to your calls when we come back. We're talking about truth and tolerance this hour with Carla Broussard, just the man to do the job. I think there might be one line open. So if you want to call 888-318-7884, we would be happy to take your call.
bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
You know, I didn't want to hurt my child. It's not what was happening in my mind at that time. It was just all the fear and the panic. And you've got Planned Parenthood telling you it's not a baby, and it just gets all so confusing. But I'm here to speak out that the aftermath of abortion is not worth it, because I cry every day for my children.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hey, Carlo, Carrie Beck, who tells me what to say on the air, came by the office today and said, you got to tell people about that Catholic Answers is going on the road. And there's a lot of on the road with Catholic Answers. We got coming up.
I just hear Nellie Wilson. Willie, it was Nellie Wilson.
Millie Wilson.
Willie Nelson.
On the road again. Nellie Wilson, one of my favorites.
I just did that.
All right, I'm going to work backwards. So November 2nd, because this is the one that I feel bad about. You're giving me the look, Carlo. Come on, man. November 2nd, Catholic Answers is going to Nebraska, to Omaha. We're going to team up. It's a team up. And we're going to combine our superpowers with those of the folks at Spirit Catholic Radio. And we're going to have a wonderful conference on November 2nd. You can find out all about that one by going to spiritcatholicradio.com. That is where we're taking the show on the road. But then, even earlier than that, we are going to Australia.
And I am.
And you are going
trip.
To Australia.
Yes,
yes you are. The place to go to find out all about where we're going to be, Tim Staples is going to be there. Carl is going to be there. Our very good friend, Dr. Stacey Trusankos, is going to be there. We're going to be there. We're going to do some radio there. We're going to do some talks. It's going to be wonderful. And there's all kinds of stuff with this one, too. Early bird pricing, just like there is in Nebraska and all that. And that, you go to evangelizationaustralia.com. And they spell it the Australia way, with an S, evangelizationaustralia.com. Go and find out all about that. And then you have to come on the road to see us, because we're all going to be down at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla right here in beautiful.
And that is going to be a good old time, my friend.
That one's going to be a crazy, wild party. And they'll be square dancing with Jimmy. And then some of the best speakers you're ever going to hear, all on the early church. This is like the core of what we do. This is the heart of what we do. The early church was the Catholic Church. There was no point in which there was some simplified scripture only or the word only Christianity that accidentally got turned into Catholicism in the 3rd or 4th century. That never happened. The early church, I'm talking about the church that Jesus passed on to Peter and the apostles, and that they passed on to people like Polycarp and Clement and Irenaeus. It was the Catholic Church. And that's going to be our big conference, September 26th through 29th, right here in beautiful, sunny San Diego. Go to CatholicAnswersConference.com to find out more about it. You're going to talk about the sacraments.
Yeah,
that's
just
the one I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to think, did they have the sacraments like we have the sacraments? Like, maybe these Protestants are kind of right about that, but they're not, are they?
No, they're not. Not in essence, the sacraments were there. I was just doing the research yesterday about the Eucharist, right, and about baptism. And it's just amazing how the theology that we and that we believe and we claim to be a part or the expression of these realities of baptism and the Eucharist, how it was present in the we would say in the first century with the apostles themselves, and we're going to give some evidence for that. But even after the apostles, when we're looking at Clement, as you mentioned, and who actually wrote his letter probably AD 70, right before the destruction of the temple, when we're looking at Ignatius of Antioch in AD 107 to 110, Irenaeus or Justin Martyr, right, AD 150, Irenaeus in AD 180, and we see Catholic theology with regard to the sacraments embedded in their writings right there in the first couple of centuries of Christianity, and it's phenomenal. So if we take that time machine, right, and we go back in time as a Catholic, we're feeling right at home, man.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it also, I feel like there's a matter of justice involved to say that these people who died in the Roman Colosseum, these people who gave their lives on the cross, you know, Nero's cross, or these were Catholic people who were sharing the Christian faith from the very beginning. And it's not right to deny that they were there, or to not to deny that they gave their lives to Christ because they stood up for the Catholic faith. It's there's a matter of justice involved in that, and we have to remember them. This hour, Carlo is here to talk about truth and tolerance, and we start with Sherry in Denver, Colorado, listening on 1060 AM there in Denver. Sherry, you there with us?
Yes, I am, sir. I'm here.
All right, ma'am, your question for Carlo.
Okay, we talk about all this politically correct stuff. How we have to tolerate someone, if we don't, it's discrimination, blah, blah, blah with the world, right? But if we, I'll use high terms, if I go ahead and support someone in quote-unquote the tolerance of the times, unquote, then I am participating in a moral sin, right? Because I'm participating in their mortal sin saying it's okay. Is that true?
Well, not necessarily, Sherry, because, I mean, there are some things that it all depends on how close the person who's engaging in the mortal sin is related to you and what sort of access you have to try and persuade them out of the mortal sin, and whether or not you have power over them to actually permit, in that sense, tolerate the evil, lest a greater evil be committed or some great good be lost. Like, for example, from a leader of a state, right? Somebody in power. Like, for example, as Catholics, we acknowledge that contraception, right, is immoral and gravely immoral, contrary to the good of our human sexuality. And a leader of a state could reasonably enforce a law to say that the selling of contraceptives is against the law, but a great good, namely the privacy of conjugal intimacy, of the conjugal act, would be lost if a leader of a state were to make the practice or the use of contraception illegal, because that, in order to police that, you would have to violate the intimacy of the conjugal act. So that's one example, Sherry, where somebody who's in power can reasonably permit or tolerate an evil, lest a greater good be lost. So that's just one example. And that leader of the state would in no way be morally culpable for the sin of contraception that is being committed by those couples and within under his care. And we could apply that same reasoning to moms and dads, etc. But with regard to family members and friends, we always, there's no, you know, silver bullet, Sherry. We have to discern whether or not we are called, we have a moral duty or a moral obligation in the relationship that we have with the individual, whether we're going to engage them and try and charitably, intellectually persuade them of the immorality of their behavior and call them and invite them to a moral way of life, to cease the immorality and begin behaving in a moral way. So it's not always the case that by tolerating someone's immoral behavior that we're automatically guilty or culpable for their sin and cooperating with that evil. Sometimes it's morally permissible to tolerate, but we have to discern those circumstances that's going to determine one way or the other whether it's morally permissible or not.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very, very much.
Now, just one little follow-up on that side is that even though there are some scenarios that allow for moral for it to be morally permissible to tolerate some evil, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't follow from that we're saying it's not evil, right? We can still make a judgment about the behavior or the action itself and say this is evil. In fact, in order to tolerate something involves or implies that I judge this is wrong, this is evil. And so I just want to say that for Sherry's sake and any listeners out there, just because there are some cases where it's morally permissible to tolerate some evil, it doesn't mean we're saying that there is no evil behavior or that that particular behavior is not evil.
All right. Thank you very, very much for that call. We go now to the break. Nick looks at me and he points to the clock like, what are you doing?
That was a good read, Si.
We go now. That was really good, huh? To the break. All right, Hillary in South Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. I was about to go to you, and then Nick wouldn't let me because he says we have to follow the clocks that have been assigned to us by the Congress of the United States. Apparently, I have to. Carla Broussard is our guest. We're talking truth and tolerance. If you have questions in that regard or comments or challenges, it's all welcome. 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament. From the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important, this pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team discusses cohabitation is not commitment.
Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So that's how we do that. When the clock says take a break, we take a break and we come back with Carla Broussard. And we're talking about truth and tolerance. It's a tough one because tolerance is a good thing. It's not bad to tolerate those with whom we disagree. But when we're required sometimes to maybe water down our witness to the truth or maybe give it up altogether in the name of tolerance, that is a serious moral dilemma. And that is what we are discussing today. 888-318-7884. We go now to Hillary in South Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Sorry, I made your wait a couple extra minutes there, Hillary. Your question for Carlo.
Hi, we go to church with a transgender man, and he's in the feminine garb from top to bottom, skirt, nails painted, even high-heeled shoes.
Okay.
And I know that that is biblically incorrect.
Right.
What in the, we always seem to end up next to him in church somehow.
Interesting.
What do I tell my sons and daughters who are very young and very impressionable?
Hillary, yeah. a quick question for you. and maybe this is awkward, but are you absolutely certain this is a man dressed as a woman? Because people look all different ways. I just want to gauge your level of certainty about this.
I am positive because I know who he was married to. Like,
oh, okay.
We've gone to this church for several years.
Got it. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, Hillary. So first of all, I want to recommend a book written by my colleague and friend Trent Horn and the co-author.
Layla Miller.
Layla Miller, Made This Way, in which they tackle many of these issues. And the book is written for you, the parent, and how to talk to your children about these issues within the culture. I think, Hillary, we basically can, like, if I were to explain this to my young six-year-old, my daughter, my six-year-old daughter, I would say something like, Catherine, do you know how sometimes when you pretend to be a princess, or maybe you're pretending to be a cheetah, maybe you're pretending to be some sort of animal when you're playing outside, or a horse, right? Whatever the pretended thing might be. She'll say, yeah, Daddy, okay. Well, imagine there was a child who really thought he or she was a cheetah, or he or she really, really thought they were something else than a human being or whatever they are. Now, in that case, Catherine, that young boy, that young girl would simply be confused, right? And making a false judgment about what they are and who they are. And we would want to try to help them as best we can to try to help them realize, well, they're not a cheetah, right? They're a human being, okay? They're a daughter of their mommy and daddy, or a son of their mommy and daddy, etc. And so similarly, if we apply that to the transgender issue, it's simply instructing our children, Hillary, that this person thinks he is a woman, and so he's dressing like women normally dress. But we recognize, son or daughter, that this individual is confused and making a false judgment, right? And thinking in a wrong way, I guess, to put it in simpler language, right? They're thinking in a wrong way about who they are as male and female and how God created them to be. And so we need to pray for them that they can no longer be confused and that they come to realize that he is a man as God created him to be a man, and that he start dressing in a way that expresses that reality that he is a man. And so I think the 2 points is, number one, this person's simply confused and just thinking in a wrong way, right? And we can articulate that, we can explain that without being hateful of the person, right? We're just, they're making a false conclusion about who and what they are. And then secondly, we want to pray for them that they can be enlightened to come to know, you know, their role and their gender as male and female, and begin living in that way. So what do you think of that, Hillary?
I think that would work. Thank you so much.
Hillary, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. Let us go then to Michael in North Carolina, listening on the EWTN app. Michael, your question for Carla Broussard.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. This weekend we had an interesting situation. We were at a dinner group with about six couples from our church. And last year we'd had a wedding, and a couple of family members that were invited were in same-sex relationships.
Right.
And we invited the family member, but not the partner. And then there are other reasons that go hand in hand with that, but we did not want to validate something at our children's wedding.
Okay.
But I guess what was difficult, what was surprising this weekend, was with out of six couples, the five that were with us were very against that approach,
right?
Even without knowing some of the other circumstances, but just the fact that we made a point or a stance to invite the family member out of love, and we'd had these conversations with them before, so it wasn't just a blindside.
Right.
So we really didn't know how to handle that when we you know, from within our own church.
Sure, sure.
Group, it was very strong, or as far as, I guess, the tolerance.
Right.
I don't know. It was just kind of the pushback that we received a year later was quite strong.
Yeah. Well, so I think it seems like you were on the right path, Michael, in the way you were discerning whether or not to invite those partners to that particular family event. Because generally speaking, you know, there might be some extraordinary circumstances where you would be morally permitted to have those partners in some sort of family function without excluding them. But it seems as if you were able to narrow it down to that in your particular circumstance, you felt morally obliged to exclude their partners and not allow them, lest their relationship give cause to scandal, right? And your behavior seemingly or apparently approving of their lifestyle. So I think it seems as if you were applying the general principles. The general principles is that if I do this and have these people here, will my actions appear as if I am celebrating and approving what I judge to be the immoral lifestyle? If the answer is yes, well, then we avoid those behaviors, right? If the answer is no, then we can go forward with it. And so I think those, just for our listeners' sake, those are sort of the general principles that it seems you were trying to make your decision based on. So I commend you for that. Now, with regard to your Catholic friends at the group there that you had, number one, my first thought is you could simply share with them and say, listen, look, we made this judgment because, number one, we believe that this particular behavior, this lifestyle, is immoral. And because we love these people who are engaging in the immoral lifestyle, and we love other people, our family members, right, we don't want to in any way show the people in the immoral lifestyle that we approve of it and lead them to think that what they're doing is good for them. We can't do that because love is only to will the good of another. And since this is not a good, we can't will this for them, nor can we celebrate their immoral lifestyle. And we don't want others to begin thinking and get into error and think that that lifestyle is immoral as well. So we had to make a decision to, out of love for our family members and for those who engaged in the immoral lifestyle, that we couldn't celebrate that in any way. We made certain decisions. So that would be the first step in saying, listen, it's out of love because we're simply willing the good of others, right? Now, secondly, if they push back on, well, Carlo or Michael, you're just being intolerant of their lifestyle, right? Well, then you simply ask the question, well, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that I need to be approving of the lifestyle and celebrating it? Well, yeah, we need to celebrate all lifestyles. Well, what if that lifestyle is immoral? Do you think that some lifestyles are immoral and others moral? If so, I think that lifestyle is immoral, and therefore, I'm not going to celebrate it. And if they push back then and say, well, I don't think it's immoral. I think it's perfectly fine, right? Love is love. Well, what is love? Love is to will the good of another. Is this lifestyle good? If it's not, well, then we can't celebrate it. And to encourage somebody to engage in that lifestyle wouldn't be love. In fact, it would be contrary to love. And so if your friends, Michael, think that this particular behavior is okay and is good and good sexual relationships, well, then we have to employ the means that we have in our Catholic tradition to show why this particular behavior and this particular lifestyle and way of living is not good and is immoral. So for these Catholic friends of yours, you could appeal to the Bible and the various passages in the Bible that condemn sexual immorality in general, but in particular, same-sex sexual activity. And then you could appeal to reason in our Catholic tradition of the natural moral law of why this particular sexual activity is immoral and not good for human beings. And so once you employ those means, then you're able to share with your friends, this is why I don't think it's good and thus immoral. And from that, it follows that I'm not going to encourage people to engage in that behavior. Why? Because I love them. So it all comes back to love. Now, as far as the resources on how to show that it is immoral, check out our website at Catholic.com, Michael. Just type in homosexuality or same-sex sexual activity. We have a variety of articles that deal with the biblical passages that condemn that particular activity. And then we have a variety of articles, some of which I wrote, that deal with the reasonable approach of looking through the natural light of human reason, or by the natural light of human reason, of how we can show that particular activity is contrary to our human good and thus contrary to human flourishing and thus human happiness, etc.
Michael, thanks very much. We got to leave it there. I hope that that was helpful to you. Thank you for the question. We're talking about truth and tolerance this hour with Carlo Broussard, our guest. And I want to give an address again because I don't know that everybody who wanted to get it got it. But we're going to be in Australia. Carlo and I will be in Perth, Australia, with other members of the Catholic Answers family, Tim Staples, Dr. Stacey Trusenkos, and a whole bunch of wonderful people. October 17th through 19th, we'll be in Perth. And so if you want to join us there at Perth, they've got a wonderful new theater. I think it's Christ the King College, or no, Corpus Christi College there. We'd love to see you there. Go to evangelizationaustralia.com and find out all about it. Evangelization Australia, that's evangelization with an S. EvangelizationAustralia.com. Right back.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I want to talk to you about the importance of bringing the news to you every day. And we do that two ways on Catholic Connection. Firstly, we give you a newscast that I write and give to you to keep you up to date on what's happening in the world in the church. And then we also do interviews daily to help you understand everything from a truly Catholic perspective.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, tomorrow morning, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Carlo Broussard, our guest. And up next is Kathy. Let's see, Kathy's online too, but I don't know where you are, Kathy, but I got you on the air now. Your question, Kathy, for Carlo?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, this is a great topic. So I guess my question is, how do I, in a loving Catholic Christian way, relay my point not only to like friends, but in particular my younger nieces and nephews who are in a public school and are being told in an environment with this, where this is normal? And I'll give you an example. I have a 13-year-old niece, and we were talking just about this same subject. And when I pointed out to her that it's morally wrong, especially in God's eyes, to have this kind of a lifestyle, she looked at me with shock. Like, are you for real? What's wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with it. And I looked at her and I said, are you telling me you have a lot of friends that are gay and it's okay? And she said, yes, Auntie, there's nothing wrong with it. And I'll be honest with you, this topic causes me such anxiety. I just feel this world is, it's just so out of control, and what's right is wrong now, and we are the minority. And if we don't get with the program, we're, like you said, we're intolerant, we're racist.
All right. Well, to Carlo, how would you, how do you address a young person in particular?
Yeah. So this relates back to what we were talking about earlier, Kathy. I don't know if you heard, but I recommended my colleague and friend's book, "Made This Way," by Trent Horan and his co-author Layla Miller, where they teach you and coach you in how to talk to your children about these issues, such as, you know, same-sex sexual activity and transgenderism, etc. But I think for our purposes here, just a few thoughts that come to mind, Kathy. First of all, try to get your daughter thinking about just morality in general and say, okay, well, daughter.
I think niece.
Oh, niece. Is that what she said? I apologize. So let's just say niece, niece, do you think that there are some actions, some behaviors that are immoral? Like, do you think, you know, bring up the school shootings, bring up the shootings in theaters. You know, do you think it's wrong for a person to go to a school and shoot people and shoot and kill innocent people? And she'll probably say yes. And so that's a good start, because at least she's not thinking in moral relativism terms, right? She acknowledges that there are some behaviors that are immoral. So that's a starting point. And then you just simply say, okay, if some behaviors are immoral, then wouldn't you think it's at least possible that same-sex sexual activity, right, is immoral? And she would have to say, if she's thinking with you, along with you, she'd probably conclude, yes, at least possible. And so now the question is, well, is it? And she might say, well, of course it is. It's normal. Everybody's doing it. And then you can simply respond and say, well, is that a way we should think about how we ought to live our lives? You know, if everybody starts running around stealing cars and stealing property, does that mean it's okay for us to go and do it as well? Well, no. If everybody goes around starting to kill innocent people at schools and that becomes some sort of fad in our warped culture, does that mean we're morally permitted to start doing it? No. So notice, niece, normal, what seems to be normal and what everybody is doing, that's not a good measuring stick for our morality, right? That's not a good way by which we can judge what's right and wrong. Okay, so now that we got that out the way, then you begin proceeding to explain to her, well, God has created us with our sexual powers, and here's what these sexual powers are for. They're for generating new children, and therefore uniting man and woman to be together, to nurture that child, to raise, to rear, to educate that child in a stable union that's permanent until death do them part. And any activity that engages our sexual powers that's going to violate what God created them for, well, that's immoral, that's wrong, because it's going against God's plan, God's design for our sexual powers. And so that, now granted, that's sort of a sketch that requires a lot of, you know, reasoning behind that, Kathy. But I think just in simple terms, God created us with these powers. Here are what the power's for. And if we're ever going to use these powers, we need to use our sexual powers in a way that harmonizes or is consistent with, that's according to God's plan for these sexual powers and what they're for. And any behavior that's going to violate that plan, go against that plan, contradict that plan, well, that's immoral. That's what we call a sin. And so that's a good way to start. And then, of course, if questions come up after that, then we try to answer those specific questions with more reasoning behind that sketch. What do you think of that, Kathy?
That's perfect. Yeah, I did try that approach with her, and actually on the same line as you were. I even said, okay, if love is love, do you think it's okay for a daddy to fall in love with his daughter in a bad way, in a sexual way? And her response was, ew, no. So then I kind of went along the same line as you did and kind of went into that direction.
Well, that's good, Kathy, because at least you planted a seed there and got her thinking that, well, wait a minute, there's different kinds of love. So there is a right love, an appropriate love between daddy-daughter relationship, but there's also an inappropriate relationship that's not really love. And so now the question is, there's appropriate relationships between a man and a man and a woman and a woman. You know, I have a best friend and I love him, right? He's a great friend and we love each other, but wait a minute, is that necessarily romantic love? No, it's just friendship love, the love of friendship, right? Okay, so that's appropriate. But now we have to ask the question, well, is romantic love between a man and a man and a woman and a woman, is that really love? And you see, this gets back to the basic question, well, what are our sexual powers for? And which is related to the romance, you see? And if the sexual powers are for certain things, such as generating children, uniting spouses together to raise those children in a bond of marriage, and any behavior that's going to violate that design, It's not good for us as human beings, and so we ought not to do them.
Kathy, thank you very much. Again, lots of calls today. Carlo Broussard is our guest. Carlo's book, by the way, is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, and he's got a brand new CD out, and it's got a spooky title. From Beyond the Grave. Is that the title of it?
From Beyond? No, close. Okay. What Lies Beyond.
Oh, yeah. What Lies Beyond. But it is about what happens after you die.
An explanation of hell, heaven, and purgatory. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to John in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on WRYT 1080 AM. John, your question for Carlo.
Hi, Carlo. John, JP2 in Veritatis Splendor warned against consequentialism and proportionalism as errors in today's church. Do you see consequentialism and proportionalism as causing a problem with distinguishing false from true tolerance in today's theology, today's church? And if so, how?
Yeah, that's a very insightful question, John. So just for our listeners' sake, consequentialism, as JP2 defines it in his encyclical Veritatis Splendor, the criteria of rightness or wrongness, right, is acting solely from a calculation, he says, of foreseeable consequences deriving from a given choice, right? So one is going to make a moral evaluation of a particular action based upon the consequences that it brings about. So let's just take, for example, contraception. A couple might think, well, we have a good go. We can't get pregnant right now. It wouldn't be a good idea. It wouldn't be prudent. So we have a good end, a good goal that we're intending, a good consequence, right? And so only because of that good consequence and the act of contraception is going to bring about that consequence, well, then therefore the act of contraception must be morally licit. And that would be an example of consequentialism, where you're only looking to the consequences or the effects of an action that's going to help you evaluate whether you should engage in the action or not. The problem with that, John, is that it misses the point that there are some acts that the very action itself entails a certain inherent irrationality, that the act itself, philosophically speaking, cannot be consistent with our human good, but it contradicts our human good, such as, I would argue, and the church has traditionally taught, the act of contraception and or same-sex sexual activity, that these forms of behavior, these actions, are inherently disordered and thus contrary to our good as a rational animal, which we're supposed to behave in accord with reason and pursue what's good for us. And so consequentialism skips that whole step about evaluating the action itself and only looks to the consequences. And I think this is prevalent in our culture today, right? Because here's the deal. If, like, think about this concerning somebody who disapproves of same-sex sexual activity. They might label me, well, let's just use myself. Somebody might label me as being mean-spirited, right, and intolerant. Why? Because the effect of my action is causing unpleasant feelings in somebody who is engaging in that sort of activity, right? Well, just because I'm causing unpleasant feelings in somebody as an effect, it doesn't follow from that my judgment that same-sex sexual activity is bad, right? I mean, because whenever you claim something to be true, somebody's always going to be on the opposite side.
Right.
And their feelings might get hurt, but there's nothing in the truth itself that's bringing about their unpleasant feelings. There's nothing in that I'm being unloving, because love is not about generating pleasant feelings. Love is about willing the good of others. So that's one example. Or to flip that around, somebody, Cy and John, might say, well, if an action is only good if it brings about pleasant feelings in somebody. So if it doesn't, then your action is bad. So that would be a way of morally evaluating my belief and my critique same-sex sexual activity. Because I'm generating unpleasant feelings in somebody, my activity is mean-spirited, immoral, right? But notice they're only looking to the consequences. They're only looking to the effects. And then proportionalism is weighing good and bad effects and using that as their only criterion for judging whether an action is good or bad. Whereas we, in our tradition, would say, yes, let's hold that off for now, but we have to first look at the action itself.
Is it good or bad?
Is it good or bad? And if it is good, then we start weighing the consequences, because some consequences could make a good action bad.
John, thanks very much for holding so we could get to your call. Carlo Broussard, thank you very much for another very fine hour.
Hey, thank you, Si.
I didn't mention this during the show, so I'll mention it now. Carlo and I did a nice conversation about evolution. We just started it today on Catholic Answers Focus. It continues for the next 3 weeks. So if you haven't listened to Catholic Answers Focus, you will love it if you listen in on what Carlo has to say about evolution and whether evolution affects how we should think about God. We'll see you tomorrow for 2 hours of Open Forum. We'll